What a first round. College Football 134 knows and understands that that first round was worth celebrating. So we are recording this a day earlier than usual to make sure that celebration is heard on this holiday week. That is Andrew Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer. Andrew, let's learn from that first round as we preview the quarterfinals.
First, I want to say hello to my fellow fringe lunatic. That is a
it's the nicest thing you've ever said about me.
That is what we'll call him a fellow industry analyst calls some of us who are you know, we've had our issues with Game Day in the past. Yeah. I don't know. I just have to stop here. I'm going to take off. For those, I'm wearing a Santa hat right now. Look, my hair is ridiculous. Okay. The second this narrative started coming out between deserve and best, it was so predictable. The second that Indiana lost this game in a blowout. But it's insulting that guys like Herb Street, Sean McDonough and the broadcast are saying things that Indiana did not deserve to be in the college football playoff because they got blown out they didn't beat anybody. Tell me who Texas beat with their 11-2 season. Do they have a top 25 victory this year? I believe they do not. And then to go on air, Kirk Herbstreit followed it up by going on air, freezing cold, after just watching Tennessee get absolutely obliterated by Ohio State. And the interviewer, I believe, said, what's the one takeaway from this game? Indiana and SMU do not deserve to be in the college football playoff. Not holy smokes, Notre Dame might be a really, really good football team. Or if Ohio State plays like this, nobody is beating them to win the national championship. There are some really good takeaways. Hey, maybe Texas got their first top 25 win of this season this weekend. And maybe they can build on this going forward and be that contender we thought they could be. But no. Indiana and SMU, because they got blown out, throws their seasons away because we'd rather have a three-loss Alabama team in the playoff or a three-loss Miss. Don't Lane Kiffin all over Twitter. Don't lose to Florida. Don't lose to Kentucky at home. Don't lose to Vanderbilt. Don't put up 3 points against Oklahoma. Blowouts. I tweeted this on Friday night. Blowouts in college football are a thing. The talent discrepancy between the elite teams and the very good teams is pretty wide. And this has been a thing that's been happening in college football forever. I tweeted out, in the college football, the 4-team playoff era, we've had 20 semifinal games. The average margin of victory in those games was 17.9 points. 9 of those 20 games were decided by more than 20 points. And this is with the top 4 teams in college football. So what do you expect when we include the 12 teams? No, you cannot. You can't hold it against Indiana because Michigan and Washington were in rebuild years. These are the two teams that played for the national championship. And it's not like Indiana was an 11-1 team that was just squeaking by teams. Their average margin of victory was 40 points. They were kicking the crap out of everybody. It's just really frustrating. It feels like people don't love college football. Forever, we were begging for this 12-team playoff because we wanted it to be decided on the field. We didn't want a computer to decide who would compete for the national championship. We didn't want 3 dudes to decide which 4 teams deserved it the most. We're levering out the playing field. And yes, we're going to weed out some bad teams. And this is the same as it's always been. We're going to get some blowouts here. But sometimes it happens in college football. Hell, sometimes you get the unequivocally 2 best teams in the national championship and you get blowouts. I'm thinking about Alabama and Clemson in 2018, 14-0, 2 versus Trevor. It was supposed to be an awesome game and it was over in the second quarter. College football, this happened. So this conversation is so ridiculous. Why even play the games? I'm sure Kirk thinks that maybe the 2007 New England Patriots should be the Super Bowl champions because they were the better team than the New York Giants. Yes, the games could have been better, and it is what it is. Tennessee deserved to be in the playoff. They got blown out. SMU deserved to be in the playoff. They got everything that was there was earned, and it happens. It's college football. And the craziest thing is, I still think we have all of the best teams in college football playing college football going forward. Like, I don't think there's a team that's out of the playoff right now that isn't a real national championship. Like, we haven't lost a major championship contender yet. Maybe we get a few more blowouts this weekend, but maybe not. Like, TCU, they shocked the world last year and beat Michigan. Like, there's a chance something like that happened because college football is crazy. So let's just enjoy it. Let's not shit on this. Sorry, on this scenario. The only change I would maybe make is eliminate the auto buys for the conference champions. We can
discuss that in 2026. That format is probably coming down the pipeline. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm usually the one angry.
Rant over.
This is the premise here is Douglas get angry, and Andrew just cues it up right out of the gates. The two thoughts I want to add is I would love if Kirk Herbstreit were to listen to anybody outside of the people in his ear, if he were to ever have a conversation, Kirk, what do you think Alabama would have done? Like, Alabama would have had just as much trouble as Indiana did. But the second thing I want to make very clear, and I say this to Kirk Herbstreit included, anyone complaining about these blowouts is simply exposing how little attention they pay to college football. They are openly admitted they have never watched the sport they are complaining about. Kirk Herbstreit, Amazon Prime analyst that he is, included. It is quite a personality trait by these people who are the hosts of the primary shows, the centerpiece shows, the flagship shows. To be angry at something you have not cared for in the first place is a real endearing quality in a human being. I look forward to a holiday with those kinds of folks. Those are the ones you want to sit with on Christmas. Good grief. Try to enjoy life, folks. Embrace the chaos.
You know who had a better final score against Ohio State than Tennessee did?
Indiana. All right. Let's keep moving through the biggest storylines from this past weekend. Let's rattle off the key podcast verbs. Please, everyone, like, subscribe to College Football 134 on all your podcast platforms. Rate it, review it, like it, adore it. If you are watching this on YouTube, subscribe to the Covers YouTube channel. That is how you make our corporate overlords think we're good. And that's all we want for Christmas. So please help us out. We have a full December and January planned. The only way you'll enjoy all of it is to be subscribed to the podcast feed. But now, as always, Andrew, the best way to look at last week is to apply the lessons moving forward. Notre Dame 27, Indiana 17. As you can tell, I've not gotten over my lack of voice from a week ago, because when you go to a football game at 20 degree temperatures and you're outside for 12 hours, it doesn't really help the vocal cords. Weird. I know. I learned that this weekend.
Well, what I learned this weekend, and once again, I think this narrative also is a disservice to the fact that I think we're learning that the Irish are a really good football team. Like, I think that's the biggest takeaway from this game. Like, the Irish have a real good opportunity to get to the national championship this season. Like, it's on the table for them. Do people around here in part of the woods don't want it on the table?
I just see value, and I want that value to continue to linger. I want that stick around.
We talked about that a bit last week, and it didn't move as much as I thought it would move.
I threatened to have this, and I have it on hand. Let's throw that up real quick. The best available lines as of today, December 23rd, the best available, widely available futures odds: Texas plus 330, Ohio State plus 375, Oregon plus 480, Penn State 525, Georgia 550, Notre Dame 700, Arizona State, Boise State, thanks for coming. So yeah. Notre Dame did not jump all the way up like we expected, like Ohio State did. Notre Dame held back a little bit there.
I see that value too. I saw a defense that it made me, on the very first drive, when they were like, okay, we're coming, they came after Curtis Rourke right away on that opening drive.
Can I interrupt you?
Yes.
I lost that Indiana first drive touchdown
bet. You did.
I do not advocate for live betting. I think you are making quick decisions and you can get yourself in trouble with me. But if you use it in reference to what you thought before the game, there can be value. When Indiana went three plays for negative 3 yards on that first drive, where I said, hey, they need to score, I turned to the three friends sitting with me, and I have them as witnesses. I said, this is over. This is done. And I unloaded on Notre Dame live line by 9.5. I don't advocate for live betting, but when you apply a lesson to your pregame thinking, there can be value. Indiana failed where I felt it had to succeed. It was over. And yes, that last two-point conversion when Indiana was down 10 was a stressful moment in my life, but that live 9.5 came home. I lost that first bet, and right, that is how I found my way to sweat through four quarters of a Notre Dame home game in mid-December.
But, like, the only reason it was that close, like, Al Golden came out after the game and was like, he was like, we weren't going to show them anything. Like, we're not throwing any more schemes at anybody. We have that game in control. And I was like, oh, this is a confident bunch. And not just confident, it's a veteran defense. Like, with Tennessee out, I think along with Ohio State, it's the best defense in the country, or at least still standing in the country right now, Ohio State and Notre Dame. Like, those are the teams. We talk about it all the time. You want to win college football games, you have a good defensive line. They have a really good defensive line, but on top of that, I love their secondary too. Like, it allows Al Golden to get creative with all those blitzes, and it's going to be interesting. We will leave it for a few bit here. It's going to be interesting to see how he schemes up against a guy making his first ever college football start.
While we're on this game, though, I want to rattle off a few Indiana stats. Now, like you mentioned, Al Golden's just straight up. We weren't going to let them get a big play touchdown, but we were done. Realize Notre Dame has not breathed easy at home all year long. Notre Dame's first home game was that 16-14 loss to Illinois. Notre Dame fans, the first time they breathed easy at a Notre Dame home game this year was when Riley Leonard scored with about 5 minutes left to go up 27-3. At that point, everybody started to relax. And up to that point, Indiana, let's see here, 146 yards on 40 plays on 8 drives. I'm removing and meaning this one play drive before halftime. So 8 drives, 5 plays a drive, 8 drives, 146 yards. So 4 drives lasted 5 plays or fewer. Their 3 scoring opportunities turned into 1, 2, 3 points. Notre Dame outright shut down one of the most prolific offenses we've seen in the last decade. It was a remarkable effort and something to, like, you're taking note. I've been taking note for a little bit, and that was another piece of evidence.
Yeah, just another one. I keep saying things, and I'm like, everything that Kirk says or these other pundits say, it just bugs. Indiana had a top 10 defense as well. The defense actually didn't play terribly in that game. I'm sorry. I'm just still flustered by these.
Texas 38, Clemson 24. Texas surprised me with a running game. I had not expected that. Remember, Texas in 2 games against Georgia had 55 carries for a total of 60 yards in 2 games against Georgia. And now that was an extreme, but I did not see this coming. 292 yards, 48 carries, 200 yard rushers. That was a surprise to me. And there's a reason Texas is now on top of that odds board. And it's not just because they face Arizona State.
Well, they'll need to prove that they can do it. Like, obviously they're big favorites against Arizona State here, but this will be the funny one. Like, I think Penn State gets the job done against Boise, but this will be the, I'd love to just see like the Big 12 come back and bite Texas in the butt here.
Well, Big 12, like kind italics of on italics on Big 12, but I see your thought process.
Yes. Cause they weren't all anyways, Big 12 currently against a former Big 12, but yeah, I actually wrote up the preview for this game and I ended up taking Wisner over 83.5 rushing yards in the preview. Clemson in their 3 losses this year, they gave up 650 rushing yards. So yes, it was not
a bad rushing defense. It was a very, like, it was not peak Clemson rushing defense, but it was worthwhile Clemson rushing defense.
But in the three teams that could run the ball and were they did it well, like Georgia, South Carolina and Louisville. Like, I believe that, like I said, 650 total yards in those three games. So yes, good for Texas here. Really important for them. Their first top 25 win of the season as well. And if they can, they just need to prove that they can do it against an elite run defense like a Georgia. Like, if they can't do it against Georgia or the Irish, like, they're going to lose. Like, they've shown right now that they haven't been able to be successful in offense without that. So it's good to see it in that game because they needed it. And they were able to take advantage of a weakness against a team that, well, not like you said, not a terrible run defense, but they obviously had some issues there against teams committed to running the football. That said, I think it's a positive for Texas, and I still don't think we've seen the best version of them. I'm not going to be surprised if we get to the end of the season and somebody and they're like, oh, and Quinn Ewers is going to have a surgery on something or whatever. And because he just he still doesn't look 100% right. Like he just doesn't. And he looks
I will like, say I know, we've got longer layoffs now. They've got 10 days between games right now, and that should help. I hear that concern. The other concern I want us to note before we keep moving here, the Longhorns pass defense looked bad. And that might not really matter against Arizona State. Whoever they would face in the semifinal, Ohio State or Oregon, would shred Texas's pass defense. That is something we're not going to get into today because it's not an Arizona State concern. But I'm filing that away pretty readily.
But because of Arizona, okay, we'll save this for a moment because we're going to talk about the game in a moment. But it's a bit of a concern, yeah.
Penn State 38, SMU 10. I don't need to spend much time here. Penn State was always going to win. Two pick sixes, obviously tilt what we learned from it. In my head, the final score was more akin to 24-3. The worry about applying this game moving forward is that my Penn State worry is this rush defense. Two pick sixes meant SMU was never going to genuinely run the ball. So we didn't really get to reevaluate that before the playoff quarterfinal against, oh, hello, Ashton Jeanty and Boise State on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, I want to say I didn't really learn anything from this game. Like, I didn't find it to be a very impressive offense. Like, we know what Penn State's bringing on defense. We know what they can do there. We need to see what that offense can do against a good team, which, because of their path, we might not see for a bit. But I didn't learn anything in this game from them. Like, it wasn't like this, oh, hey, Drew Aller, like, had this great game, or the running backs went off. Like, it was just like kind of a, whatever. And they got the job done. Like, and it was good. And James Franklin gets his first pseudo big win. And yeah.
And Ohio State 42
was pretty cool.
it was pretty cool everywhere. Ohio State 42, Tennessee 17. What we learn here is the SEC is not very good. Kirk Herbstreit will obey whoever pays his checks. And Ohio State clearly played Michigan too tense, too tight, too terrified of losing. College football rivalries are underrated, underappreciated. Yep. Kirk Street's obsession with the corporate lords in college football overlooks how chaotic college football rivalries can be. If and when Parker Fleming joins us, he always espouses, win your rivalries, compete in your conference, who cares about the rest? Ohio State's got to learn that, find its way to not be psyched out against Michigan. Because what we saw Saturday night against Tennessee was the Ohio State we had seen 11 times this season. What we saw at Oregon, the Ohio State I was betting on all offseason. Ignore that Michigan loss. The psychological intangible of it made it too skewed to be predictive. Ohio State is a true title contender, would be the front runner if it did not have to face Oregon in the quarterfinal, unlike Texas.
Which is ridiculous. But to add to that, yeah, This is my takeaway was who's beating Ohio State if they play like that. Like that was really impressive. And we love to give Ryan Day and his staff a hard time, but he got out of his own way. I thought I was just like, you know what? Will Howard, we're going to trust in Will Howard and we're going to trust him to put the ball. Like we've got two NFL wide receivers. Like, let's give them the football. And they did. And it worked crazy, right? Like, your most talented, getting your most talented guys the football. That's if Will Howard can be efficient the way he was and get Jeremiah Smith and Emeka Ebuka the ball the way he did in that game, and the defense does what that defense can do, they're probably the favorite now. Like, except for if they have to play Oregon, which is too bad for us. It's too bad that we might have to see the best game of the entire playoff in the next set of games.
Now we're going to charge forward into the quarterfinals. Folks, we thought it was of value to get some early thoughts on the record. Maybe you are avoiding Christmas Eve dinner by watching the Hawaii Bowl and want to start placing your bets on the quarterfinals. We are here. We are here to help that cause. These are our early thoughts, our early leans. I have more of them than Andrew. That's generally how we approach each week. I dial it up early. He dials it up late. By the end of the weekend, we've covered the whole spectrum. We will be back on Friday with in-depth breakdowns. So let's get into those. Let's also acknowledge our playoff bets went a frustrating 4-7. We weren't surprised by the blowouts because we understand college football, but that doesn't mean we saw all four of them coming. I went 2-4 on playoff bets, lost a little more than two units. I'm also 2-0 on my other bowl games, so I'm doing okay. Whole season, 63-67-1, down 1.23 units, including futures.
We have to acknowledge, though, 2-0, the curse is lifted. We hit both of them. We hit the Florida bet, minus 12, and the under in Indiana and Notre Dame.
Friday was a good day for us.
Friday was a good day for us. And then the rest of the weekend, yeah, a little rougher. Yeah, I went 2-3 on the playoff bets for minus 0.87 units, 2-0 on bowls for two units. Now I'm 71-65 for this season for minus 2.5 units when you include all of our futures. But I still think we're going to finish the year strong, and we're both going to finish in the black, and it's going to be a successful, profitable season for 1-3-4 when all is said and done.
We're also going to include a bowl game or two outside of the quarterfinals at the end of the show. And I want to note right now, you've got one coming at the end of this week. That line has come nearly a touchdown your way. You were ahead of that. These are our early leans and some bets on the college football playoff quarterfinals. We will be back with more on Friday. Penn State, Boise State, New Year's Eve, the Fiesta Bowl. Penn State, a 10.5 or 11-point favorite. Total of 52 or 52.5 as of today, Monday afternoon, December 23rd. You see that. You see Boise State as a full 11-point underdog. What goes through your head?
What goes through my head is that the books are begging us to take Boise State here, giving us the full 10 points. Okay. I can see where you're headed with this already. I don't know if Penn State has really played a matchup like this, like
ran through Penn State. That's the only, and Ohio State didn't really struggle. Those are the only offenses akin to this.
Yeah. It's an interest. Obviously, Penn State is favored by this for a reason. And this is why I don't have a bet on this yet, because I just don't like it. I don't like this game at all. This is a matchup that says Penn State should win. Game should probably go over the total. But I just am not confident in anything that James Franklin is dishing out right now. And this Boise State team is going to I feel like they're just going to come out and want to prove everybody. Like, Ashton Jinty's already ticked off about not winning the Heisman right now. Like, some of the things he's saying is like, I feel like he's feeling really disrespected at this point. And it could be interesting to see how they start running the ball. They start doing some of those angry runs against Penn State in this one.
That's where I'm leaning. I see this game and I realize Boise State's had 3 weeks off. Now, there are some people in this world who see 3 weeks off and think that's a ton of rust. Well, Notre Dame had that much layoff before Friday night. Ohio State had that much layoff before Saturday. 3 weeks off is not an end-all, be-all. It allows Ashton Jeanty to finally be healthy, to finally get some rest and recovery. I don't expect Ashton Jeanty to rattle off 40 and 50-yard touchdowns. I do think he's going to get 4 and 5 yards at a time. Penn State is very good in limiting explosive runs. It's only decent in shutting down consistent rushing attacks. Coming into bowl season, ranked number 37 in defensive rushing success rate. Yeah, 37 is pretty good, but it's not the elite level you need to shut down this Boise State rushing attack. And if I'm saying Boise State can pound its way to 4 yards a carry, and then realize that's nearly half of Ashton Jinky's season-long average yards per carry, which I believe off the top of my head is something like 7.3 or 7.4. If Boise State can gain 4 yards a carry, 5 yards a carry, that is going to just move their offense down the field well enough to stay within double digits. I think Boise State covers this plus 11. I am making that a show bet right now. Plus 11, ooh, neg 110 at Caesars. I see Boise State just hammering away. Oregon ran the ball 41 times against Penn State in the Big Ten title game, gaining 4.5 yards per carry. Boise State is going to effort to do something similar and just to stay in contact. And then maybe we get a little Boise State Fiesta Bowl magic and we can really enjoy this playoff.
Oh, that's a good callback there. I remember watching that game and just being like, this is the most incredible thing I've ever seen.
I would disband this show if you did not remember watching that game. We would end this broadcast and never again come back.
Oh my goodness. It was incredible. One of the greatest. What would you call that? What's that fake called?
Statue of Liberty?
It's not really a Statue of Liberty, is it?
The throw and the hand up on the back that is technically called
a statue of Liberty. Anyways, yeah. Incredible stuff. Ian Johnson, right?
Yes.
Anyways, but yeah, no, this is the strategy for Boise State, right? Like, keep this game close, control the clock, long drives, wear out that Penn State defense with those 4-5 yard carries throughout the game. And then that will then in turn force Penn State, like Penn State will have to run the ball too then. Like, because yeah. they can't allow that their defense to go back out. You want to give Boise State like a 7-8 minute drive. You don't want them back out of there a few minutes later. Like the game plan is there for Boise State. It's going to be interesting, and I'm really excited to see it because this is the one that could get a little, like, we have those trepidations around Penn State always, right? Until they prove otherwise, until we see them in the national championship, basically lifting that trophy, you can shake your head. But that is when we'll probably be like, oh man, Penn State did it, sort of thing. They're not going to get the benefit of the doubt for the most part, just because they've been too inconsistent in too many areas.
If they beat Notre Dame or Georgia, that will be enough for me. If they beat Notre Dame, that's getting ahead. Let's go to the Peach Bowl. That's our first New Year's Day game, noon Eastern time. Texas, a 2-touchdown favorite against Arizona State, total of 51.5 or 52. I was surprised how quickly this climbed to 14. Now, as of today, Monday, you can find a juiced 13.5 available. But this has pretty much solidified at Texas by a full 2 touchdowns.
I wanted to get – if it gets to 14.5, I don't have a bet on this one either, but if it gets to – I'm waiting to see if it'll get to the 14.5. Then I'll probably jump on Arizona State at that point. I am an unabashed Sun Devils fanboy at this point. Like, I love Cam Scataboo. He is one of the best running backs in the country that not enough people are talking about. And I think he can be successful in this game. And Sam Leavitt's been good enough to give a good balance to this Arizona State offense. It does enough, just enough to give you a little worry. And the defense is obviously a little shaky for the Sun Devils, but their biggest weakness is on dropbacks, and we've talked about in the past few weeks that Quinn Ewers hasn't looked great. Like, they also don't get beat on explosives too often, which is a good thing in this matchup, and I think they just have to limit those explosives, and I think they can keep this one close. I've been really impressed with Arizona State.
Well, then I'm encouraged because I'm taking Texas by 2 touchdowns. Texas next 14, neg 108 at DraftKings. To me, it's about Texas' defensive line. You can give Sam Leavitt credit, and I understand you're doing so. Parker would tell you that he's got that dog in him. But if Texas' defensive line can stand up to Cam Scataboo, what's Arizona State really going to do? If they can, and I'm not saying shut him down entirely, but let's say they hold him to 100 yards and no huge plays. What is Arizona State going to do? To me, that is enough reason to go grab this at neg 14, especially because we've got, I'm not going to do the math, 23rd, 8-9 days. This could climb to 14.5. I'm going to be real glad to have my 14 at that point. And I look forward to Friday when you commit to Arizona State with 2 touchdowns. And we can
I hope
fight.
It good. I hope so. We're due for a good battle. We're too chummy at this holiday season these days. Too much getting along. So let's have a little fight on one of these playoff games.
The greatest fight we're going to have in the quarterfinals is the Rose Bowl. A Big Ten versus Pac-12. No, wait. A Big Ten versus Big Ten Rose Bowl. Ohio State, 2.5-point favorites against Oregon. You and I have been looking forward to this rematch. We had to wait 3 weeks longer than expected.
Yes.
I was always going to take Ohio State in that Big Ten title game. You were always going to fight me with Oregon. New Year's Day, 4 Eastern. Before I make my bet that will surprise no one, I am very curious. You, for all that time, were going to take Oregon in that Big Ten title game. Did Ohio State impress you enough against Tennessee?
Well, like, if they win, like, I'm not going to be shocked. That's a really good football team. But there is, like, Oregon can do the exact – I am confident that Oregon can do that too. Like, Oregon can win this game big. They could lose this game big. Ohio State can win this game big. They could lose this game big, or we could have a tight match. So in that sense, I'll take the points. I'm going to be on the points with Oregon here. I hope it gets to three. That's my hope, that this Ohio State surge and this great performance will get some public money behind them, kind of forget about the, and maybe the performance by Oregon's defense in the Big Ten championship game, where they kind of got shredded by Penn State there, kind of puts a little more confidence in backing Ohio State in this rematch. But I'll end up taking the points. I hope it gets to three. So once again, we're going to wait till Friday, see if we get that 3 points. And
that's good process to reveal that we have. I'm making this a bet. You already have your lean, but you're anticipating it climbing. I got it at Ohio State by 1.5 on Sunday, and I included that in my reaction column on Sunday mornings, which I slave over for that purpose of get that out before these move. I'm not scared off by 2.5. I'm taking Ohio State by 2.5, -110 at BetMGM. I've been saying this all season. Saturday reinforced it. Ohio State has been better power rated than Oregon all season. A 1-point loss at Autzen Stadium should not dissuade us. You are far too in your head and self-conscious and paranoid and tripping over yourselves against Michigan should not scare us. I'm taking Ohio State here because I do believe Ohio State is outright better than Oregon. And frankly, Ohio State now has a whole new piece of momentum and just that belief in itself that it lost only a month ago against Michigan. I think Ohio State's going to be real feisty for Dan Lanning.
They seem feisty, but you mentioned Dan Lanning. I will take Dan Lanning over Ryan. Right, like I said, Ryan Day did a really good job of staying out of his way on the weekend, but he's still going to be on the sideline in this game too. Can he do it in back-to-back games? That'll be a big question for me. But yeah, I prefer Dan Lanning in this situation like 10 times out of 10.
There's one more quarterfinal to discuss. What could be the slowest and to a fan like Kirk Herbstreit, the most boring of the quarterfinals, but to you and me, it's going to be climactic and dramatic and tense. Notre Dame is currently a 1.5 or 2.5 point underdog against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, total of 44 or 44.5. That's New Year's Day, 8:45 Eastern time kick. It is a bold thought to say, hey, you celebrated New Year's in New Orleans. Now you have to stay up until 8 p.m. local to see kickoff. That is a choice that has been made. And I may know some people who are trying to figure out their best strategies to survive that. I'm sure Notre Dame will not have no such worries.
No, they will not. And this is to me, obviously, the most interesting matchup of the entire quarterfinals. Kirby Smart is already talking about, oh, this extra week of preparation is perfect for Gunnar Stockton because Carson Beck is obviously not playing this football game. You talked about it last time we spoke about how, yes, Gunnar Stockton looked good in that first drive when it was very scripted coming out of half. But after that, it was not a whole lot, not a whole lot of production after that. And now he's going up against another very, very good defense. One that I think will be the toughest one that Georgia has seen all season. Once again, no official plays for me on this one yet, but I'm really close to just taking Notre Dame on the money line here. Like a guy making his first college.
Wait. Just like your Oregon bet, that number's going to climb. I think we're going to have a week and a half of headlines for Notre Dame's without defensive tackle Riley Mills, which it is, and that's a loss. But I think that's going to get put into the money line and the spread more than it should.
Yep. And this Georgia, like we've talked about the SEC. The SEC just might be an overrated conference this year. Like Georgia should have lost to Georgia Tech. they got the brakes beat off them. I know they came back, but Alabama made them look terrible. They got crushed by Mississippi. Like it's it is not anywhere close to a Georgia team that we are used to. This is a spot where I think the Irish have some real value here. And like we talked about their futures. This is it for them. They get through Georgia and they have a pretty clear path, I think.
Well, that is some quick Penn State fade right there. I do want to get a bet in here because I am shocked by the number. This total is 44, 44.5. It's hard to imagine it getting lower, But when I see a Georgia team total under of 22.5 available at Neg 112 at FanDuel, I'm astonished. You have Gunnar Stockton making his first career start against arguably the best passing defense in the country. There are going to be people who say, hey, Carson Beck wasn't that good either. Can we stop discounting winning national championships? Can we stop discounting his second half against Alabama? It's not like we've gone 5 years since seeing a title-winning quarterback show some promise. And is that a shot at Aaron Rodgers? I don't know. He's the only other quarterback that gets slammed as much as Carson Beck of late. Carson Beck is better than him and has been since 2019. The timing on that is real interesting. I really am sick of people saying Carson Beck was bad. Gunnar Stockton is going to make Carson Beck look real good. Gunnar Stockton might play well, but against this defense, Georgia is going to struggle to put up more than 3 touchdowns. I am taking this under team total 22.5 right now because I find it hard to believe it can last a whole 10 days.
The other thing, I'm glad you said that because that's the other one that's circled that is hasn't been fired on yet, but this is another perfect SEC first half under situation for us, which we'll come back to on 6.3 at half, right? Like that's what we're kind of looking at here. Yeah. I don't like, and we hinted at this before, like Al Golden is going to get crazy with the shells and the, where these blitzes are coming from. Gunnar Stockton is not going to know what hit him. Like I know, like I agree. Carson Beck was super inconsistent this year. His decision-making was horrid at times, but he is a huge upgrade over Gunnar Stockton, and he would be starting this football game if he was available. I don't want anybody to get mistaken. Like this wasn't some like, oh, we've got Tua waiting in the wings replacing Jalen Hurts in the, like, yeah, sure, they made that move, but this is not that same situation.
You mentioned Al Golden getting crazy. You could say the defense will be chaotic. Let's use that as an opportunity to bring in our favorite agent of chaos, good friend Parker Fleming, always here to make us think twice about things on Twitter at StatsOWAR. Parker, how are you this Christmas week?
Hey, doing all right. I'm at my, like we all are, we're, you know, traveling around. I'm at my in-laws or my parents out in the garage here. So making sure my camera lines up, you guys can hear me okay. But Merry Christmas, Andrew. Love the hat. Good to see you guys.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you.
Love to hear the end of your playoff breakdown there. Some hopefully some good matchups here. I don't think I've moved off my prior of Kirby Smart lifts the trophy at the end of the season as much as maybe you guys have, but I've got that one as a dead toss up, which is not where it was at the beginning of the season. So that's for what that's worth.
And I want to specify, as is always the case, when you're saying that, you're talking about your numbers, and your numbers have not adjusted Carson Beck to Gunnar Stockton.
No, have not. I do think, yeah, you guys made some points there, you know, I do think Carson Beck's a little maligned. It's weird that like no one can figure out the Georgia quarterback stuff because it was the best kept secret in college football for a couple of years. They're like, Stetson Bennett wasn't good. Like he was fine. He was a fine quarterback. But like there was all this like first round draft pick and all this stuff. You're like, guys, come on. And then everyone overcompensated to say like, oh, Beck is actually good. He's a good quarterback because he is better than Stetson Bennett. But then things started to go south and everyone's like, oh, Stetson, you know, oh, Carson Beck's terrible now. He's got to, you know, I'm going to make memes about his face and all this, whatever stuff. Top 10 in drops, in yards lost to drops. And that's only if you account for the receiver catching the ball and falling down. Yards off the catch on the table, I think he would be top, you know, two or three there with the wide receiver room has really, really limited not only the physical passes that he's made, but also what they're able to call and draw up because of what those wide receivers are as well. So they've been limited there. Do you want to believe in Georgia addition by subtraction there and saying like, hey, we've got to go back to basics. We've got to be kind of simpler and go with Gunner. I don't know.
Not against Al Golden. Not against Al Golden.
I will say this is going to be a hot take because I love what they're doing. Notre Dame's running back coach retweets my graphs. Big fan. I think they're really, really solid. Outside of the 98-yard run, which was great and is what it was, they didn't look amazing against Indiana. They didn't – it wasn't incredible. There were opportunities for a team who wasn't terrified of the moment to be in that game.
You offer a fuller thought there. If there was an Indiana fan over my shoulder, when Notre Dame was up 14-0 going into halftime, he goes, wow, you're up 2 touchdowns. Your yardage differential is 104 yards, and you have a 98-yard touchdown. I'd be puckering if I were doing, buddy, you've had an additional possession. Those 98 yards don't go just disappear. They can get some of those yards. You offer a fuller thought. That guy and I did not get along the rest of that night because I don't do well with stupidity.
Douglas, I need to tweet this out. I forgot to do this today. The beat that bad graphic with all of these, and it's going to be very, very lopsided in terms of Notre Dame there. But you have to remember that you have to assume that if they don't score that 98 touchdown, they actually throw a pick six and Indiana gets a positive game state. So 100% that's going to happen there. Okay, can we talk about non-playoffs on this? Is this okay? Because there's action that's interesting for the rest of this. And you guys did a good job breaking down. And frankly, we spent 48 of our 75 minutes on BetUS today talking about the four playoff games. So if you want my thoughts, I'll do a plug for that over there. But I think there's some really fun games. There's two in particular I'll get to, and then maybe we'll ask a couple. The Alamo Bowl is kind of going to be awesome, I think. I'm starting to believe that Colorado BYU is going to be like a legitimately fun matchup there. Colorado, maybe not some opting out. I would be surprised if they were like 100% there, but I do think that Deion does want to win that game and they will score some points to win that game. If Hunter is limited in any capacity, Western and Shepherd combined for 35.3 target share, 16 touchdowns, like there are weapons there. I've got a little bit of a weird angle here. Lassiter, who's leading target share for BYU, is out first half for this game. He comes back in the second half, lights everybody on fire. They get galvanized. They've got the culture and everything. BYU, when the ball starts rolling a little bit, they score points. I'm feeling overy in this. I think we're going to get just absolutely some fireworks here. I think Colorado, BYU was riding that turnover luck earlier in the season, but the last three games are actually negative in turnover margin. Colorado's been very consistent with turnovers. And so I think we could see a clean game here and we could see, just a whole bunch of points here. So that was my lean in this game. And I'm trying to do the press tour right now and talking about like, hey, Colorado simplified the offense and Sanders looks better. Like he looked bad last year because the offense was outside of it and he wasn't doing well with pressure. They limited the rules. They simplified it. He's got good athletes around him and he's getting rid of the ball. 5.1 big time throw to 1.1 turnover worthy play. I think they can move the ball in this BYU defense and avoid the turnovers, short field nonsense. And I think BYU with Coach Satake cares about this game too and wants to win and is going to drum up some fun stuff. Retzlaff is way overplaying his expectations. But I mean, speaking of don't get carried away with the quarterback, right? Like, okay, community college guy, like coming in, like great, good for you. They found a diamond in the rough. He's an adequate starter. Only 57 point completion, 33.2 big time throw to 3.7 turnover to play. So what are you going to do? But I don't think Colorado is going to terrorize him or anything. I think we're going to get a lot of points. So I'm excited to watch that one.
That should be fun.
I have a conspiracy theory, which is keeping me from joining you here. I fully expect Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter to show up and play a series, play a quarter, and then opt out. I find it hard to fathom these players are going to play. I'd love it if they did. I'm all for it. I will be surprised.
That was my take on Alabama-Michigan. Was like, I don't believe Alabama one bit. I don't believe a single one of those guys is going to step on the field for any meaningful football. Like, I just don't. I have to see it to believe that. And then it moved to 14 during the show. Anyway, it was like 11 when we were locking it in at the beginning of the show, and it moved to 14. I was like, oh, okay, well, whatever. I just don't know who you can trust in this situation.
It would be, frankly, like if short circuit your brain to the last 5, 10, 15 years, it would be unprecedented for players of Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter's caliber to play in an Alamo Bowl.
And that it'd be great for the sport.
I'm all for it. I hope they do. Yeah. Please. But I'll believe it when I see them come out just the second half. I won't believe it until then.
Is there a chance one of them plays and the others doesn't? Like, is Sanders more likely to play than Hunter at this point?
Yes.
Yeah, because, yeah. I mean, Hunter can only lose, right?
Yeah.
And he's already battling, he wasn't full 100% as the season went on.
No.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say he's battling social media right now.
I was going to get into that.
I don't even want to talk about it. I'm just going to say, if you're participating in it, you're a loser. Stop.
Yeah.
I don't even know what you're referencing. So let's carry on forward. Good. Parker, hit us with more chaos.
Here's a transition for you. Ready for this one? Speaking of what you can and cannot trust, you know who I don't trust at all? The Missouri
Gene
Tigers.
Chizik?
I don't trust the Missouri Tigers farther than I can throw them. And that's a football team full of dudes that I just couldn't throw. Iowa's 14th in pass rush grade, third in coverage, 45th in run defense. Mambo's out for Missouri. Tolleson at center's been hurt. He's not playing. Burden's not going to play. I'm not expecting, if Cook and Weiss, to your same thought about Colorado, if Cook and Weiss are on that field, I don't expect that to be 100. I think the Iowa defense is going to be too much. Get this, Missouri 8-4 against the spread this year, but they are negative in margin against the spread because when things go bad for Missouri, they go very, very bad. A lot of that's the A&M blowout, right? Like that's one game, but still it confirms my priors. And so I like it. I like Iowa in the 3 points here.
I do have Iowa money line in my personal ledger. I have not made it a show like bet. That. We've been so playoff focused because that's called content. But yeah, I do have an Iowa plus 132 in my personal ledger for that same reason of Kirk Ferentz is going to get his team there. I don't know that Missouri's going to.
And Missouri's got some recruits, man. They're already focused on winning the offseason. Like, this bowl game doesn't matter. They never show up in the bowl. I think there's a lot of angles there. My third one, another. So that one, first game, very sexy. Second game, decidedly unsexy.
Hey. We appreciate all body types here at College Football 134.
Gonna watch it. Just calling it like I see it. The third one could be very interesting. There's some opt-outs here that make it a little dicey, but I have a play on it. Baylor and LSU, Texas Bowl. I wish this was full strength. I wish we could get the motivation and incentives to line. I think this is a very interesting game. Nobody in the nation has had a better transition from beginning of the season to end of season in terms of offense. Stab it all, got the reps in. They figured out where they wanted to go. Robertson looks great. Led the league in QBR. A couple other metrics looked kind of nice. Baylor's 63.6% to the over this season. Their points in the last five games, 45, 20, 49, 37, 38. LSU, a little bit lower than that, 37, 24, 16, 13, 23. But I think it's safe to say that Baylor's defense isn't on par with Florida, Alabama, Texas A&M, Oklahoma in that stretch. So I think that we'll see some points here. I think LSU will get creative on the offensive side of the ball, try to move some stuff around. Baylor, super motivated. Obviously, the Aranda, I don't know if you'd call it revenge, like he took a head coaching job. But the Aranda history there might be an angle a little bit. I think in that one, too, we're going to see a lot of points. I don't think we're going to see a lot of defenses. Both of those defenses are like in the 40s, 30s, 40s of efficiency overall. So I like that one quite a bit as well. I think we see some fireworks in that game, too. Two games in Texas down there that we should see a lot of points in.
Sawyer Robertson has been really undervalued when it comes to his passing yards prop. Yeah. In the second half of the season, they've continuously posting it at like 225s and 227s, and we've been hitting that pretty often. I'll be looking at that here again.
Yep.
There is a vibes moving forward battle in that game, in that Dave Aranda, yeah, your job is secure now, but if you were to lose this, how would the next 9 months feel? Brian Kelly, you're not necessarily cooking with gas right now. If you were to lose this, what is the August narrative? Both these coaches need to have some good vibes going into January.
Absolutely. This one and the Alamo Bowl are two games that are like, if college football is going to reclaim the bowls, games like this are going to pan out, right? And they're going to be good. They're going to be compelling. People not opting out. Shout out to who else? Fran Brown at Syracuse was like, dude, we're playing. And if they can align it, compensate their players to account for the risk of injury, because it is real, make these things matter. I'm slightly optimistic that we can land this plane somewhere reasonable and get some interesting games here.
Parker, we were going to hit a few more bowl games if you want to stick around and tell us why we're wrong.
I'm great. Let's walk through it. I got the numbers up on, I'll do another plug, on NCAAinsiders.com. You can click the matchup generators, look at all that, look at the bowl games too, so I can pull them up and follow along. Let's do it.
We will next record, check in my notes, coming Friday, December 27th. Friday. That's going to be a thorough quarterfinals preview, and we'll have a few more bowl bets then, but I made sure to go find one more bowl game I really liked. Andrew, you did as well. I will note, Andrew, last week, you bet Syracuse at neg 11. The Washington State Exodus has moved that to neg 16.
It was the writing was on the wall there, so I'm glad we hopped on it early.
What you are going? Oh, you're going to Vegas today, aren't you?
I'm going to the Las Vegas Bowl because I'm fading Lincoln Riley and another exodus here at USC. I'm taking Texas A&M -3.5. This is just another situation where, like, Mike Elko is still trying to implement his system. He's still got his, like, Marcel Reed is going to play this game. I have confidence in the defense that's going to be playing for Texas A&M. The end of the season 17th in success rate. USC is losing a lot of Zakarian Branch was a big loss for them. We talked about this off camera, and it just feels like something ain't right in Southern California right now with the, like, and he's not the only one. There's a handful of, like, impact guys that are leaving that program this season. So, and that's, that includes the defense
was not good by the when all was said was and done this season. So I think these are just two teams that are the motivations are very different. I'll very happily lay the 3.5 here with Texas A&M. USC's defense 95th in success rate, I think. Just it's like I said, Elko is building towards something, and Lincoln Riley, just unless you're a quarterback trying to win a Heisman Trophy, I don't know if you want to be playing for USC right now.
The only pushback to that I have is just like Skowerton Stewart and Shamar Turner are gonna be out. And that's my angle on that is like if you could just terrorize the defense, the offensive front, USC refuses to run the ball. If that goes away, and it doesn't totally go away, but it's at least mitigated a little bit, you're like, okay, I know the last couple of years have not been amazing, but like Lincoln Riley is a great offensive mind. Lincoln yes. Riley can scheme up some nonsense. If he can get back to his roots and like if that weakness is mitigated, that's the only reason I'm not on that game, because I think I agree with you there. Just the opt-out scared me off a little bit.
I tend to agree with Andrew here. I think that Zachariah Branch transfer to me is it sends waves beyond him. I'm not saying Lincoln Riley has lost that locker room, but if you want to know how Lincoln Riley loses a locker room, it's when you lose a dynamic player who should excel in a Lincoln Riley offense. That, in my head, it's not been a great month of focus in that locker room.
Well, I think it's when the quarterback development pipeline looks like it is, too. Like, that is the undercut. That's the crack in the foundation and everything else. It's the house starting to shift and the beams starting to crack and everything. So he's got to fix that, certainly. But I do agree. And to mention what I talked about a little bit with Beck being out and the wide receivers is like, okay, just go in and slot. All right, wide receiver 3 is now not wide receiver 1. Wide receiver 4 is now wide receiver 2. And like how that slots in, and you're like, okay, that doesn't make me super excited about USC. So like, I'm not going to be on USC there.
I am going to the Pinstripe Bowl. And Parker, earlier you mentioned Missouri is already thinking about winning the offseason. I've got some of those worries about Nebraska. They managed to, at this point, retain Dylan Raiola, but that took some effort. I think Nebraska is already focusing on 2025, as Matt Rhule should be. Then you look at Boston College, closed the season 5-0 against the spread, 3-1 outright in its last four, exceeded bookmakers' expectations by 9 points per week in those 5 against the spread wins to close the season. 3 of those closing covers were as underdogs. Bill O'Brien has quickly righted the debacle Jeff Hafley left behind. His focus will entirely be on building that forward still. I'm taking Boston College money line plus 145 in the Pinstripe Bowl because I think I always like a year one coach who has found success. Mike Elko as another example at A&M and can solidify that in the bowl game, especially against somebody who might already be looking to next August and next September.
Yeah. That's a good thought. Boston College definitely traded lower variance for lower mean with the transfer to Grayson James. So like, okay, you're not as dynamic maybe with Castellanos, but the bad tail of plays that just became unpalatable, we just boxed those off and said we just can't do that anymore. So good for them, I think, doing that. Obviously, they got the transfer in or building the foundations. I like that a little bit. Nebraska's defense took some steps back this year in terms of just the raw. Like in 2023, they were top 5 in explosives per rush and explosives per pass on defense, and they're like 15-17. I haven't run that in a week or two, but they had stepped back a little bit on that as well. So there's the opportunity for those explosive plays. That defense isn't as feisty as you wanted. Certainly this season it wasn't strong enough, like for example Tennessee, it wasn't strong enough to carry the offense through its struggles, and I think that showed it multiple times this season too.
I always feel better when Parker tells me he likes my thought process. It helps me sleep at night, which is just never a small thing.
I realized I'm wearing the TCU pullover here, so it's going to make me sound like a total homer. But I also was on TCU minus 13 versus Louisiana. TCU's first non-power bowl opponent since like 2011, I think, if I looked back and saw that right. And TCU with some key opt-outs. But the big deal is, when TCU's been bad, they haven't been able to run the ball at all. They're 31st in rushing success rate. Louisiana is 132nd in rushing success rate allowed. Like, it's just not a good defense. They're on their third quarterback. I feel like I'm punching down here a little bit. But even with the opt-outs, I think TCU, speaking of needing, you know, needing that kind of bump, they're unhappy with their bowl placement. They need to back it up. They something needs to happen for Sonny Dykes here. They've got to get some positive MO, and they like what they've done with the transfers and all that. But I think this is an opportunity for them to put up some meaningless points against a team who's outmatched. So it doesn't mean Louisiana's bad. It just is what it is. So that was another one that I was on.
you're wearing that TCU pullover. That's the one you stash at your parents, so you don't have to pack as much every time you go home.
It's embarrassingly my most comfy. I mean, if you know me, you know my situation and all that. I won't talk about that here, but it is unfortunately my most comfy pullover. And so I just grab it and I forget that the logo is on it, you know, but here I am.
We will let you get back to your family. You enjoy Christmas week, Parker.
Yeah, thanks so much. Happy holidays to both of you. Appreciate you guys letting me hop on again this season. And hope all your bets cash. I'll catch you guys later.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, Parker.
That always makes life easier. Taco, Andrew, I think we're pretty much there today. We, again, will be back with thorough quarterfinal breakdowns on Friday. Do you want to recap what you've got, including two bets from last week that are still coming this week?
Yes, still on the board. We've got I have to scroll here real quick. We're going
bottom Syracuse, of the outline, buddy.
The bowl, too? Syracuse minus 11.
I did not include that.
See, I forget what bowl it actually is. If I can scroll here real quick. Why can't I find Washington State? This is good live television.
You
right
got
now.
Syracuse by 11. It is now neg 16.
Negative 16. It is in the Holiday Bowl. So that's the Holiday Bowl, Syracuse and Washington State. Good note by Parker there that that's a program that's going to try to build up again and wants people playing in this bowl game. So that helps that even further. And the other one was Oklahoma Navy under 43.5. That is in the Armed Forces Bowl. That hasn't moved yet. And we're going from today, Texas A&M minus 3.5 in the Las Vegas Bowl.
I, from last week, have the most important Christmas Eve event you have to worry about. I have San Jose State at 4.5. The Nick Nash opt-out knocked that down to 3.5 against South Florida. And I have Texas Tech by 1.5 against Arkansas, and I don't know what bowl game. From today, I made four playoff bets. Boise State plus 11 in the Fiesta Bowl. Texas, neg 14 against Arizona State in the Peach Bowl. Ohio State by 2.5, sticking to my guns all season long in the Rose Bowl against Oregon. And the Georgia team total under 22.5 in the Sugar Bowl against Notre Dame. And then for good measure, I added Boston College plus 145 in the Pinstripe Bowl against Nebraska. Andrew, that does it for us. You go enjoy Christmas. That is Andrew Cayley at covers underscore Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer at D underscore Farmer. We will be back in your feeds this coming Friday.